Welcome to the podcast today. I am sitting here with Tori Feldman from Sacred Ancestry, and I am so excited to share with her what we were able to find about her family. Her work is really cool, and I will let her explain a bit about that, but I am excited for you to meet her, and I hope that you go follow her on Instagram and check out her offerings there. But before we get started, Tori, can you just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about you, your work, and some about your family?
Yeah, thank you so much, Megan. I'm really excited for this podcast today because the work that I do in the world is ancestry from a spiritual perspective. So I don't really work with genealogy that much. What I do is I'm an ancestral healing guide and a spiritual mentor. And I help people, mostly women, to connect to their ancestors spiritually. So what that often looks like is it's through guided meditations, it's through reflecting on what you do know about your family, but also diving deep into the intuitive feelings that you have and into the emotions that live in your body when you think about your ancestors and when you think about the histories of what your lineage has been through or might have been through. Things that might not make sense to the mind, but the stories that are living in our bodies. So it's like the saying, the body keeps the score. We've understood through epigenetics how a lot of the traumas of our ancestors can be passed down through our genes. And so what I help people to do is to do intergenerational healing work. So I not only approach it from a spiritual perspective, but also weaving in psychology, weaving in understandings of different perspectives from cultures all over the world, especially more ancient cultures, to try to get a perspective and a view of how can we have relationships with those who have already passed. So since I was a little girl, I've been really interested in ancient cultures' perspectives on what are their beliefs about the afterlife, and how can we use ceremony and use ritual and use our own prayer and create altars and make offerings to the earth in a way that's not just made up or going through the motions, but that's deeply authentic for each of us. And so in my work, I guide people to create their own relationship to their ancestors. I'm not the kind of person who's like, your grandmother is telling me this. I actually guide people so that they can hear their own ancestors' messages. And it's not like I'm seeing dead people. A lot of their messages come through just feelings, emotions in the body, things that intuitively just feel true. And then we keep going deeper and deeper and deeper to explore that and to see where it guides us and to see what we can heal in our lineages. Mm-hmm. So that's a little about my work. And when it comes to my family, so I have a dad who's Jewish. So I was raised Jewish. And on his side of the family, on a DNA test, he's 100% Ashkenazi Jewish. So his side of the family for, you know, as long as it goes back has been Jews marrying other Jews, marrying other Jews. And my mom's side is a little different. So my mom is the first in the whole lineage that isn't Jewish. So she comes from a background that we're going to be talking about today that's more Polish, German, Czech, and many other places in Europe. And growing up, I was pretty close with my dad's side of the family. That side of the family tended to really want to tell stories more. I had a really deep relationship with my great aunt Hermine, who's my dad's sister. And she's the one who sparked my love of ancestry. She's the one who held all the family stories. She could talk about which relatives died in the Holocaust. She would talk for hours and hours on end about her incredible experiences traveling the world. And she just loved to share. And on my mom's side of the family, which we're diving into today, it was a little bit different. So my grandfather on that side of the family passed when I was pretty young. I was about 10 or 11. And he was a kind of person that was a little more angry in nature and wasn't as easy to connect with. And he sometimes called me Connie, even though my name is Tori, because my aunt's name is Connie, and he just wasn't completely present. And he was someone who in my family caused a little difficulty for his children, a little bit of trauma. So it was difficult to connect to him, and I never really had a deep connection, but I was there in the area when he passed. I wasn't in the room, but I was in the area when I was 11. So that's one of my memories of him. And on that side of the family, his wife, my grandma Marilyn, she's still alive and with us. And she's someone who I love so much. And the women on that side of my family are who I asked Megan for us to explore. And it's so interesting because all of my mom and my aunts are all so deeply creative. And so my grandmother, Marilyn, was deeply creative as well. She loved to sew and she created costumes for fun and she would knit and crochet. And so that was my connection with her as a child. But we never really talk about family history that much. It's something that I keep wanting to dive into with her, but we just haven't sat down with a recorder. We've had some conversations, you know, sitting on the beach together, but I haven't really documented it. And I know that in her family, like I like to, when I sit at my ancestral altar, I have pictures of my ancestors and I light candles. When I light the candle in front of my great grandmother, Lillian, I say, I am Tori, daughter of Lynn, granddaughter of Marilyn, great granddaughter of Lillian, great great granddaughter of Mary, great 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 granddaughter of Katharina. And so I know my maternal lineage and I'm really, really blessed and really privileged to be able to trace back my lineage. And I know that Lillian was someone who loved to like make stuffed animals and give them to kids at shelters. And she was just such a creative woman. So I know there was a lot of creativity, a lot of like artistry, a lot of crafting in the women on that side of my family. But aside from that, I don't know that much else. I've found that through looking at what I do know in my family history on that side of the family, there's a lot about the men and not so much about the women. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And the hard part of genealogy is a lot of the records, especially the farther you go back, are based on the men, right? The women are, I mean, it's really hard to even find anything about them the farther back you go. All right. Well, we took a look at your family tree. We actually, I'm going to share with you two kind of lines in your tree. One is actually on your father's line. I'm going to talk about one of your great grandmothers. And then on your mother's line, we're going to talk about a few of your maternal ancestors in there. So I'm just going to share my screen. So if you are watching this on YouTube, you'll be able to see what I share here with Tori. But we're just going to get started here. So we're first going to talk about your paternal great-grandparents, Harry Feldman and Ethel Chrysler. Okay. Chrysler?
Is that how you say it?
Chrysler. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they died in 1972 and 1983 at the ages of 80 and 70. But Harry, he was born in Solomonovo. I know I'm going to pronounce so many of these names wrong. He was born there in the village, a furthest west village in Ukraine in 1892. Now, this small village was established in 1332. So it's like an ancient village there. And Ethel, her birthplace was Nagazar, Hungary, which is now Velké Ozerovsky. I don't know. Okay. I am horrible at pronouncing these, in Slovakia. So it was Hungary until 1918. But this was also a small village that was settled around the same time, 1300. At least that's the earliest record that they have of that area. So he and Ethel were married in Sechovsky.
I know this one. It's Sechovse.
Sechovse.
Yes.
Okay. That is not what is in my head. Sechovse. Okay, in Slovakia. So this map here just kind of shows how far it was from where they were both born. So when Harry or Henrik was born, it was about 100 kilometers and only about 6 kilometers were from where she was born. So it was closer to where she lived. So they came to the United States in 1921. So in April of 1921, Harry, or Henrik, as it is shown here on the passenger list when he arrived, he left England to New York in April of 1921. And then 1 month later, your grandfather, Eugene, was born in, now I have to say that word again, Sechovse.
Yes.
So that's where your grandfather was born, right? Yes. So he was born a month after his father had left. And then Ethel, his mother, came in October of that same year. So here is Ethel, or Esther is what was written on the passenger list, Feldman. and she was 26, I think is what that is. And then your grandfather, Gino, is what it says there.
Yeah.
And he was just a few months old, 5 months old, I think is what that five is. And then her sister also came with them, Helena Chrysler. So it also gives a description of what your great-grandmother looked like. It says she was 5'3". She had clear skin, fair hair, I think is what it was, and blue eyes. Mm-hmm. And amazing. Yeah, so then Ethel, she arrived in October that same year. Her Ellis Island certificate is also included in her naturalization, but it was a 9-day trip. And she had $65 in her possession.
Wow.
So she traveled as Esther Feldman. Her mother, Rose, was listed as her contact in the old country. And then she was there with her son, Gino, and her sister. So this is the ship that she sailed on at the age of 26. Yeah, so this was the ship she sailed on with her six-month-old baby and her sister. And this was one of the ships that was thought of being one of British finest liners that they came on. And they actually had to come from where she lived to where they left in France. It was about 1,200 miles that she had to travel, I'm assuming by train, that they traveled over to France to come across to the United States. So what are you thinking as you're looking at this, thinking about your great-grandparents, how they left their old country, came to the United States? What do you think that was like for them?
Oh my God. I'm just looking at this picture of this ship. I'm covered in chills.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember learning about my great-grandmother Ethel's sister, mm-hmm. Helena, and I know that her name was Esther, but we knew her as Ethel, mm-hmm. at least in the memory. I never met her myself, but yeah, it's really interesting to think that this is the ship that they went on together, and imagining my grandpa Eugene or Gino or Gene as being mm-hmm. such a young baby. And mm-hmm. I know that later when they came to the States, they had Hermine, who's the great aunt Hermine that I talked about, who's the one who started my love of ancestry. And she was the first one born in the US. Mm-hmm. So it's just wild to think of that transitionary period and what that must have been like, leaving everything that they've ever known, being the mm-hmm. first to go over to, you know, a 9-day trip, I think you said it was,
yeah,
to a completely new place where you're leaving everything you've ever known. So mm-hmm. like sailing into the great unknown and with your baby and with your sister, just, I wish mm-hmm. I could hear those conversations they were having mm-hmm. and really understand more about their decision of why they left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that was a scary thing for them to do, to leave. I'm sure they'd never been on a ship before or even knew anything about what was happening. So that was a courageous thing for them to do. And consequently, they left in 1921 before Central Europe, before all of, you know, World War II and everything, before it got worse over there. So. So here is her declaration of intention for her naturalization record. It lists, so it's actually in 1922 that Congress enacted a law that women were no longer automatically naturalized with their husbands. So they had to then apply for naturalization. So it's kind of neat that her declaration here in 1925, there's some things like you can see here, the name of my crosses out wife and puts husband. So they had to change the forms because they had not been updated yet. And so this gives some information about her. And again, it tells her description that she's white, fair complexion, 5'3", weight 140 pounds, brown hair, blue. It says brown eyes here, but it said blue on the other one. And that she's where she was born, her date of birth and all of that. So, and it even has, I believe this is her signature yes, on this document there too. So
yes,
that's pretty neat.
I have another genealogist put together a bunch of signatures of my ancestors. Cool. I have them all on a card on my altar.
Oh, neat. That's something. Yeah. So that is that record there. Now they settled in Ohio. And a lot of the Jewish community came to Ohio. So chain migration is what that's called, is when it's just like some people start going, and then, you know, the people back home hear about it, they keep going to the same location. So Jews came to join their family and friends who had already established themselves. So the influx of immigrants from the 1880s transformed the Jewish community here in Cleveland, Ohio. So in 1930, they were renting one of the four units of this home that was built in 1924. Their rent was $40 a month, and your great-grandfather was a peddler. He was selling dry goods as a peddler. So I'm sure that was not the most glamorous profession there in Cleveland, but that is, a lot of the Jewish community worked as peddlers. So then here is Ethel's mother, your second great-grandmother, Rose Klein. She came to the United States in 1935, all on her own at the age of 66. I'm sure that was a scary thing for her as a 66-year-old traveling all by her own, all by herself, all the way to the United States. She was born in Pałhaza, Hungary. Her most recent residence was in Sochowce. I'm probably saying that wrong again, but
no, you're doing
great. So that same place. So that would have been the same country that was in Hungary. So here is where that was. So here's Pałhaza is where she was born, your second great grandmother. And there's this interesting forest right beside there that I'm going to show you a little bit in a little bit. But so her birthplace was this small little village in Hungary, Pałhaza. This area has been inhabited since ancient times. The village was founded in the 1320s and belonged to the Fuszer estate. And it was first mentioned in history in 1387. The village was destroyed several times during the Hussite Wars and the Ottoman occupation of Hungary. In 1711, a plague killed the inhabitants of this village. It was mentioned again in 1786. Its lumber mill, the predecessor of today's lumber mill factory, was built in 1875. So here is that Fuszer Castle. That is the people that ruled over that town in the 14th century or so. This is the castle that is there. That is, if you see on this map, Fuszer, I think it's actually up here a little bit. But so they ruled over this little village.
Wow. And then the photo on the top versus the bottom, is the bottom like a reconstruction?
Like a restored, yes. So it's been reconstructed or restored, but that's what it looked like before they did that.
Wow. And was that visible from town?
I think probably, because it looks like it's up on this mountain, and then there's kind of a valley all around.
Oh my God, around this is there. Incredible. Just to share, first of all, this is so incredible, the timing of this, because just two or so weeks ago, I was with my parents and they said, oh, Uncle Bob called. That's my dad's brother. And he wants to go on a trip to visit Sochowce to see where grandpa was born, my grandpa, his dad. Mm-hmm. And instantly I'm like, oh my God, we have to go. And my parents were like, yeah. So we told him Tori's going to want to come. And then my parents said, so we're thinking that we go on a whole trip together as a family to visit the places that our ancestors are from. So we're going to go to Slovakia, what was previously, Czechoslovakia and Hungary and all of that, to visit Sochowce. So now you're giving me other places, because we're about to plan our trip on the map that I want to visit, including this forest where my great-great-grandma Rose is. Mm-hmm. And also we're visiting some places in Germany and in Poland. And we're also going to go see concentration camps for the first time, which we've never seen in person. And I have so much I could tell you about about Rose Kritzler, who you just showed her gravestone. And this is, the town that she's from. She was an absolutely outstanding, amazing woman. The same role that my Aunt Hermine played for me, her Grandma Rose played for her. So when her Grandma Rose came over from Europe to the US, the two of them shared a bed alongside my great Aunt Hermine's cousin. So it was these three women sharing a bed. It was really a grandmother and two from two generations, down the line. And they lived through the Depression together. But during that time, my Aunt Hermine just learned so much from Rose. And Rose was a woman who didn't have any education past, I think, like the third grade, past 8 years old or something like that. But she taught herself how to speak 5 or 6 different languages and how to read and write in all of those languages as well. And it was really important to her when she was looking for someone to marry that she married someone who was literate. And so she started correspondences with who would later become her husband just by writing letters. And they decided to get married, and they got married. And afterwards she found out it wasn't actually him who wrote those letters.
Oh, wow.
So he wasn't actually literate. And he passed away after they had 9 children together. And she became a single mother of 9 children.
Oh, wow.
And her profession was that she became a midwife. So she helped other women give birth. So I just imagine this incredibly intelligent woman who did so much to teach herself all of those different languages, who was a midwife in the community with 9 children and no husband to support them. So it's so amazing to see these places on a map and to see something that she may have looked up at to, like this castle on a hill or whatever it is, castle, I don't know. But when she was a little girl, to see more of this through her eyes, it's just absolutely incredible.
Wow. Yeah, she sounds like an amazing woman. All right. So then so here's Pajazo where she was born. And I thought it was interesting, this like forest. So it's like a national forest now that's protected. There's also a castle in this forest too. That is the castle of Rejek, which is not sure how far back her family, if they lived near here or where that went, where that was in relation to where they lived. But just to kind of show how ancient of an area that was and how kind of what the landscape would have looked like. Hey, I hope you are enjoying the podcast so far. I just wanted to jump in and let you know that I am now offering sessions to the public like this podcast interview. So I have called them ancestral story weaving sessions because it's so much more than just learning about your ancestors. It will be an immersive experience where I will share stories of your ancestors and how their story fits with your own. They will be longer and more in-depth than these podcast episodes, but just as magical. So go to knowyourancestors.co/session to book yours and use code PODCAST to get $50 off. There are very limited spots and my introductory price will be going away soon, so act quick if you want to unlock the power of really knowing your ancestors and understanding a bit more about how their lives may have affected your own. So again, go to knowyourancestors.co/session or just get the link in the show notes. Now back to the podcast. But now we're going to skip over to your maternal line. So some of these pictures might be familiar, I'm not sure, but we found a very well-researched tree on Ancestry, a public family tree for this line of your family, for Marie Horacek. I can't remember what her married name was. I think it was, let me just look quick. So she is your second great, great grandmother. She was a Sikora.
Yes.
Yeah. So she married Martin Sikora. Anyway, so this is her. Mary is right here. She's your second great grandmother. And then here's your third great grandmother, Anna Horsek, with her. These are her four of her daughters. So your second great grandmother, Mary, was the oldest. She was born in 1866 in Bohemia, which is now like Czechia, Slovakia, around there.
Yes.
And then here is a picture of Anna when she's older, your third time's great grandmother. And in this ancestry family tree, it appears that she's to be the classic Bohemia grandmother with a sweet round face and wearing a traditional babushka.
God, this is incredible. I've never seen this picture.
Oh, wow. I'll have to share this ancestry tree with you because there are so many photos on there and information.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Horacek family, so Anna, Joseph, and their 4 daughters, they came to the United States in 1878, and they ended up settling in South Dakota. So Joseph, when they left the old country, he was listed as being a minor. So this is just the passenger list of the port in New York when they arrived in 1878. And you can see Joseph Horsek, he was 53. Anna was 42. Marie, your great-great-grandmother, was 9. Teresa, 7. Sophia, 4. And then Anna was 12 months old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So he was a minor in Bohemia. That's so interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So here by 1900, Joseph had passed and Anna was now a widow living with her youngest daughter, Anna. And here you can see this 8 and 4. So that 8 means that Anna had 8 children and only 4 were still living at this time in 1900. So I'm guessing that these four daughters that came to the United States, those are the 4 that lived. So she must have had 4 other children before that did not survive. So then back to Bohemia, where Anna was born, we're going to now look at her mother, who was Marie Anna Kaisek. She was born in 1806 in Dosice, probably pronouncing that one wrong, in South Bohemia, which is now Czechia. So here is her birth record. So this is her birthday is 06, so December 6th in 1806. And what else does it say there? The date and then the house, name of the house. And the house is number 25. And then it gives the name of the priest here, but you can't really tell what it says. And then here's her name, Maria Anna Kaiset.
If it's 1-6 December, so is that 16 then?
Yes. No, that's right. 1-6 December. And then it doesn't have the year there, but it was probably on the top of the page. It was 1806.
Wow.
And then the second page of it is down here. But her father was František Kaisek. He was a peasant from Dosice, a serf. And then the mother, Maria, who was a daughter of Mateusz Kostner and mother Maria from Streisowice. Okay, and then it lists the godfather and godmother, but we cannot really make out what that says there.
Wow.
Or unreadable there. All right, so this is the home that Marie was born in. This would be your fourth great-grandmother. This is the home where she was born in Dosice, South Bohemia. Okay, and I did, just to see where South Bohemia was, it was like in Czechia, present-day Czechia, just south of Prague.
Yes, yes.
So here is whoever's family tree is who are visiting there.
Oh, amazing.
So this is the home where Mary Anna lived at the time of her marriage to Jan Hauska.
Wow.
So that house is still standing, at least at the time, 2006, when this picture was put up there. But anyways, so that is some of your maternal line. There is a lot more on this public family tree that I could share with you, but I think that's where we will stop that for today. Incredible. But how are you feeling as you're looking at all of these things about your ancestors?
It just opens so many mysteries, like so many more questions. I cannot wait to dive in on ancestry. And it just brings up this sense of wonderment. For me, it's like I do ancestral work and I know that these ancestors existed and exist like in the spirit realm, but to see the houses that they lived in and the sites that they would have been familiar with, it cements the reality of it even more and just makes me want to learn more and more and more. So I'm so grateful for all of the research that you did, and it allows so much more of their stories to come through. Like even the stories that we didn't talk about, like I can just feel more of the stories. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious. It just opens up a new kind of curiosity to learn more. And this all has just felt so guided. Like literally as my family is planning this trip, you're giving us locations to go to and places to go look. So it's, yeah, it's incredible. It's like the ancestors are speaking through us, through you, through these photos so much.
Yeah. No, there's so much power in seeing. I feel that's what I love about genealogy is seeing these records and seeing these things that help to build kind of the story of your ancestors. And I should mention that we did have a genealogist research your father's line. So that bit that I shared there was from Jen Schaefer from The Formidable Genealogist. She researched him.
Thank you, Jen.
Some of that tree. So there was more that she also researched that I didn't share with you today, but I will for sure send all of that to you.
Wow.
So yeah.
Incredible.
I am thankful to you for agreeing to be on the podcast. I know that your work is important, and I think that together it can be even more powerful that as we can see kind of those tangible things of our ancestors, that can even make that connection to them even stronger. So I'm grateful for your work. And I know that that is an important part of so many people's healing and ability to kind of move forward with their history and their future of their own posterity.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel we need both of us and all of us together, right? Like the genealogy and the history and the names and the places and the birth dates and the death dates and the grave sites, and also like the connection. For me, I remember diving into 23andMe, and I just got this feeling like so many people are taking DNA tests and then they wonder, okay, what's next? Like, what do I do with this, percent of this and this percent of that? Right. And I think a lot of people want to learn more about their ancestors and want to feel a sense of connection or a sense of like, oh yeah, my ancestors were Vikings. Now I have something cool that I'm connected to that's a part of my lineage. And a lot of people just don't know where to go after that. So I think that you holding the genealogy piece and all the other genealogists that do, and myself and all the spiritual ancestral healing guides are holding like the spiritual piece, the like a different kind of connection. They're just two different, you know, approaches that together, it's like we are really able to access more information than ever, ever, ever before. And for our two worlds to come together, it was just so, so special. So I'm just so, grateful. Thank you for all your work.
Well, thank you so much, Tori. So let us know, how can we connect with you? Is it best on Instagram or website, or let us know?
All of it, all of it. So my Instagram is Sacred Ancestry, and my website is sacredancestry.com. And for those of you who are curious to begin exploring more of the healing side of diving into your ancestry, or have some questions about what would it mean to connect a little more spiritually, what are some of the wounds that might be living in my lineage that I can help heal? And what are some of the gifts that live in my lineage that I can begin to reclaim and feel deeply connected to? I have a free 5-day challenge. It's called the Wise and Well Challenge. And it's all through email. You sign up and immediately you start getting emails every day for 5 days. And it's full of journal prompts and links for you to dive in to hear different songs that your ancestors may have sung in the regions that they were born into, and ideas for simple rituals for you to do in a deeply authentic way to you. And it takes you on a 5-day journey. So the intention of the 5-day Wise and Well Challenge is 5 days to connect to your ancestors. So if you'd like that, it's sacredancestry.com/challenge.
Awesome. And I will for sure put your links in the show notes so everyone can access those easily. So thank you so much again, Tori, for coming on the podcast, and be sure to go check her out on Instagram. She shares so much good, content on there that I think is, helpful for anyone that's seeking to connect more to their ancestors. So, thank you so much, Tori.
Thank you, Megan.
Jen Schaefer from theformidablegenealogist.com was the genealogist that helped with this episode. We're so grateful for her. And here is a tip from Jen.
Hi, I'm Jen Schaefer, owner of the Formidable Genealogist Research Company. It was fantastic to work on Tori's family tree for this episode of Know Your Ancestors. I have a research tip that I'd like to share with you from my work on her family lines. Always be open-minded. I generally preach that throughout most of history, people usually spent their whole lives within a 5-mile radius. That wasn't true with Tori's family. Her second great-grandfather, Joseph Feldman, was born in Solomonova, Ukraine, and died in Košice, Slovakia, about 100 miles away. Just because people typically did something, that doesn't mean that your ancestor did. They might surprise you.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast today. I would love it if you could go to iTunes to leave a rating and review. That really helps more people to be able to find the podcast. Since we're so new, we need all the help that we can get. So share about it on Instagram, leave those reviews, and we will see you next time.